We gotta finish Bereshit. That's like pretty crazy. Went pretty quickly. All right. So last Shabbos I was in shul, and I guess I brought a sefer with me. I brought Rabbi Lam's drashos, and I read a drasha from 1955, and it's really amazing. Every time I read Rabbi Lam's drashos, I'm reminded that like he's right. Like the timeless message of the Torah is there. It's a drasha that's given in 1955 that if you were to get up in shul this Shabbos and the rabbi were to give it, it would be exactly spot on. So let's take a look at the first source. So Vayar Yosef ki yashit aviv yad yimino al rosh Ephraim, vayera beina vaitmoch yad aviv lasiro tam al rosh Ephraim al rosh Menashe. So Yosef sees that his father is putting his right hand on Ephraim's head, and this is bad in his eyes, and he tries to switch his father's hands. Now, it's probably, you know, you can imagine what's going through Yosef's head at this point. He's thinking, oh my God, Dad, you're doing this again? Do you remember what happened last time? It's 30-something years ago, 40-something years ago, that we were in the exact same position. You had to decide who you liked more for whatever reason, and you chose the youngest over the oldest, and it all blew up in your face. Dad, why are you doing this again? Pasuk Yudchet, Vayomer Yosef el aviv lo, chein avi ki zeh habachor simi mincha al rosho. So Yosef says, Dad, like, what are you doing? It's not right. He's the bechor, put your right hand on his head. So it's interesting because from within Yaakov's words are a little bit of a nechama which was missing by the ketonis pasim. The brothers felt that like what the message that Yaakov was sending was he, Yosef, is going to be an am. He's going to be the future and everybody else is not going to be part of the Jewish people. And yet here, what does he say? He says, I know. It's not that Menashe won't be a something. It's just Vegamu Yigdal, and he's also going to be great. V'ulam achiv haketon yigdal mimenu. Except I need you to know that the younger brother, Ephraim, he is going to be greater. Zaro yeh melo hagoyim. And his children will fill up, the nation. V'yivarachim
v'yomal. Do you think it didn't occur to either of them that not only was this a Yosef and brothers situation, but it wasn't a Yaakov and Esav situation that didn't strike them?
Yeah, the words, it's funny. I find sometimes that like when I'm preparing the Chabura, like some things come to me, but usually when we're actually learning, so things become like a lot clearer. Yeah, I mean, the fact is that it sounds a lot like Yaakov and Esav at birth, or before birth, right? The v'gam hu yigdal, v'gam hu yela am, right? It sounds a lot like umil om yamatzah rav yavod tzair. I guess the difference only is that there, it's in relationship one to the other. He's going to be bigger than his brother. He's going to be subservient, right? Here, it's like, let's just look at Ephraim on his own. Ephraim on his own will be an am. And he's going to, v'gam hu yigdal. Or the other one yigdal. So, but yeah, it does sound. There is definitely like a sound of the same story. And yet Ephraim and Menashe, we have no indication whatsoever that there is any conflict between them. In fact, Rabbi Sachs, we shared a long time ago, his reasoning for why we bless our kids on Friday night, Yisim Chalokim, Ephraim and Menashe, is because Ephraim and Menashe are the first people in the history of Tanakh that the younger one is more important than the older one, and the older one says, I accept, I'm okay with it. But we'll see. I actually saw a beautiful pshat by Rav Sorotzkin that I want to share. That's completely different. Okay, Pazichav. Oh, Srili, you had a question.
Yeah. So, what difference does it make which hand it is? If this is the destiny of Ephraim versus the destiny of Menashe, What difference does it make which one gets the right hand?
It's
same bracha at the same time. I mean, I hear you. One's going to get a little bit more of the bracha. They got the same bracha. It's at the exact same moment. You know, usually when we give a bracha, both your hands are on your single kid, and you give a bracha. You don't necessarily put your hands on different kids at the same time and give the same bracha. But here, that's what he's doing. He's one hand on each kid is giving the exact same bracha.
Right. So if it's a same, everything else is equal, then the right hand is a little more than the left. And so wherever he puts the right
hand. Correct. But to the extent that he's creating some, you know, angst among Yosef and his sons.
That's what he does. That's his thing.
I know that's his thing. His MO, he was very consistent his whole life.
Right. I mean, I guess I was going to say the same thing as Shmuel. Like, it's symbolic. Like, you know, you could be having a meeting where you have the CEO in the middle of, you know, at the head of the table, and then there's a seat on the right and a seat on the left. Like, in some places, I don't think there's, like, meaning to it. But in other places, you know, when there's a meeting, the seating is chosen, like, bedafka. And the fact that he puts, you know, one person on his right and one person on his left is indicating sometimes that the guy to his right didn't just get to the seat first, but he's a little bit more important than the person to the left. Certainly in like the Godfather type, you know, situations, like that matters. So, you know, I guess that's a symbolism. Yeah, Shmuel.
Clearly it did matter because Yosef got upset about it.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
No. It mattered in optics. That it mattered in the fruition of the
grand scheme.
Right.
No, I don't. I mean, I think Ephraim, look, Yaakov had nevuah, and he looks in the future and says, I mean, first he looks in the future and sees all like the horrible people that are going to come from Ephraim and Manasseh, and he's like, forget, I'm not blessing them at all. But after he's calmed down, and Yosef says, no, it's fine, it's going to be okay, he comes back and takes a look a second time and says, ah, from you is going, will come Yehoshua. That's God, that's greatness. From you, Menashe, will come Gideon. It's not quite as greatness. So it would have happened anyway. But still, you know, if you're trying to demonstrate that, you know, you're getting your bracha by flipping your hands and giving the younger one the more, the more coveted or the more respectable place, the indication is that there is in some way, the other one is not as good. So, yeah, that's what bothers Yosef. And whatever, Yaakov says, I don't care, it's fine. Pazuchav evarachem bayom ahu leimor, b'cha yivarech Yisrael leimor, yisimcha elokim kefraim b'chonashe. And this, to this very day, this is how we bless our boys. It's an aside, but it's just totally not connected. I remember hearing Rabbi Et Shalom say once, that when he blesses his kids on Friday night, of course, this is the bracha he uses for his boys, but for his girls, he actually does not do the one, Kesar Kerivka Karachal Valeya, because there's no biblical source, it's not a pasuk. Instead, there is a pasuk in Megillas Rus, which sounds a lot like this pasuk, and that's the pasuk he uses. It's just interesting. Okay, so Vayasim at Ephraim lefnei Menashe, he put Ephraim before Menashe. So there's a million people that are bothered by this question. Why is it that we on Friday night use this language of Ephraim and Menashe? Ephraim and Menashe don't seem to be, you know, that special. So, you know, we shared the Rabbi Sachs answer, but Rabbi Sirotzkin has an unbelievable answer. He says, I need to actually Google Translate for one word there. So he says, even though every single nation in the entire world, for the course of history, has Jewish blood on their hands, that's not the biggest cause of the biggest challenge that we have. So he has this word, emancipacia. So I'm like reading this word and I'm like, I have no idea what it is. So, of course, you know, you put into Google Translate and it says emancipation. Emancipation, assimilation, if Sirotzkin says, is really what has done us in over the course of time. Yet who are the two people that are most symbolic of success, of not allowing the freedom to be part of society, the freedom to leave the Jewish ghetto, to be still successful Jews? It's Ephraim and Menashe. The two of them could have been as assimilated as it comes. Their dad was the Mishnah LeMelech of the most powerful ruler on earth at the time. And yet, they were still good, holy Jewish kids. And that's why we make them the source of our bracha on Friday night to our kids, is to say that with everything that the world throws at us, Yisimcha Elokim Kefraim B'Chimenasha, hopefully you should be able to withstand the temptation and be successful. David, I can't tell if you don't like that and that was the look on your face, or it was a different look. I'm okay. It's easy.
A different stream of thoughts running through my head about the 10 tribes that were lost. The only two who actually remained are Yehuda and Binyamin. And then it made me think of, but how do we know who Levim? It was just a whole bunch of random thoughts disconnected to specifically what you're talking about, but related to the brothers. So no problem.
Okay, I only ask because it was a similar look to the look I've gotten many times over the years of when I give a shot, you're like not loving it.
This one happens to not be against you.
Okay, I actually think, I mean, of all the answers, I happen to think that this one happens to be one of the nicest answers. So that's why it's not what I want to do tonight. But it was something that I saw that I liked so much that I felt like I wanted to share. Okay, I would have done it in the text itself, but it was really late last night and cutting and pasting because you can't get Rav Sarutzkin online was too much, so you had to like get it secondhand. Okay, the pasuk I really wanted to spend our entire time on tonight is pasuk Chav Bet. This is probably the most difficult pasuk in the entire part of the parsha. I'm giving you Shechem, whatever that means, one more on your brothers. So now, again, Yaakov is going back to his script of favoring giving one brother more than the others. So that's the first question. The question that we're not going to address is why would Yaakov do that? But what is a Shechem Achad? What is one more over your brothers? Asher lakachti, that I took Shechem. When did Yaakov take it? If Shechem is really the city of Shechem, when did Yaakov take that? It was Shimon Levi that did it. Miad ha-Emori, from the hands of the Emori. There is no Emori there, right? It's Shechem ben Chamor ha-Chivi, and Becharbi uvekashti, with my sword and my bow. We have no indication anywhere ever in the entire Torah of Yaakov fighting Becharbi uvekashti. The only fight Yaakov ever does that's a physical fight is
angels.
Right, the wrestle with the angels. Becharbi uvekashti. What in the world is that? Okay, so this is what Rashi says. Shechem Achad. He's going to give us two answers, which should tell us something. Right? He's not exactly happy with either one. So Shechem Mamish. The first pshat is that it's Shechem Mamish. We're talking about the city of Shechem. You're going to get Shechem, which, again, if you accept that Shechem of today is biblical Shechem, Yosef is buried there. And so Yosef is returned to the place that he came from. Well, really amazing medrash. It's actually funny because really the sources for everything tonight are very midrashic. But there's a medrash that says that Yosef on the way back, which creates a lot of problems in terms of figuring it out, because they only go to Maras HaMachpelah, which is in Chevron, and the pit is in Shechem, or Dotan, which is very far from there. But there is a pshat that according to the Medrash, that he stops by the pit on his way back, and he stares into the pit. And that's what leads the brothers to be terrified when they come back to Canaan. But according to what Rashi is saying, Shechem Mamish, is that when what Yaakov is actually saying to his son is, I'm returning to you where I did you in. I did you in at Shechem, so I'm giving it back to you. Okay? Becharbi vekashti, kishahargu Shimon velevi et anshe Shechem nitchansu kol sfiyuvtem listavik behem. When Shimon and Levi kill anshe Shechem, the entire people from all around team up to try to hurt Yaakov. V'chagar Yaakov kinelei ha-milchama kinegdan. And Yaakov arms himself, v'charbi uv'kashti, and he takes care of them. Okay, so what's the problem with Rashi's pshat of Shechem being Shechem, the city? Right, not only is it not documented, it seems to be the opposite, right? If you, what happens, right?
When everybody else is afraid.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. And yet here we're I don't want to say creating, that sounds bad, but we have a story here that seems to be completely against the pshat of the psukim. Okay, the second one is Shechem Achad Hu HaBechora, Sheyitlu Banav Shnei Chalakim. What's your Shechem Achad, your portion that you're getting, is you're getting the actual Bechorah, which means you're going to get two Chalakim. U'Shechem L'shon Chelekhu. And Shechem is the language of Chelek, Ketargumo, like the Targum says, V'harbe yesh lo domim b'mikra, ki tashitemu Shechem, tashit zonai lefanai l'chalakim, achalka Shechem, derech yiratzchu Shechema, which is ish chelko, each person will get his portion, la'avdo Shechem Achad. So Rashi says, I could find you a bunch of places where Shechem means a portion. Asher lakachti miyad ha'emori, miyad esav sha'asa ma'ase emori. When did I take this Shechem from Esav, who is an emori, meaning he acted like an emori, which is, an emori is, I don't know, one of the prototypical terms for someone who is immoral. So when did he take it from him? So he didn't really take Shechem, he took the land of Canaan. And then Yosef is getting a portion of it. Davar acher, shayat tzad aviv be'imrei fiv. Esau was an Emori because he used his mouth against his father. B'charbi v'kashti hi chachmati utfilati. Charbi v'kashti is my wisdom, which is my sword, and my keshet, which is my tfila. Targum says, what does it mean? B'charbi v'kashti ba'uti uvitzloti. It's my different kinds of tfilos. So there is a tfila of like a cherev, which is very close to you. And then there is the tefillah of long distance, which is the arrows. Okay, so neither one of these are great pshat. They both give you a little bit of a problem what to deal with. So I'm going to give you a pshat that's so much worse that you're going to look back and say, "Ah, Rashi makes a lot more sense." It is the Targum Yerushalmi. The Targum Yerushalmi on this very pasuk of Bet. This is what he says. Va'ana hava ha yehavit lechulak chad yatir alachach. I'm going to give you a portion above your brothers. Okay, sounds like Rashi, but he then says, what was that? Luvushe de Adam Kadma. Adam Kadma, Kadam is like the first, right? I'm giving you the clothing of Adam Arishon. Nisiv Yate Avraham, which had come to Avraham, Avui, the Ava min Yadoi the Nimrod Rishia. Avram got it from Nimrod. V'yahav Yate LeYitzchak Abba, and he gave it to Avram. Gave it to Yitzchak. The Yitzchak Ahab Abba Yahav LeEsav, and Yitzchak gave it to Esav. V'ana Nisavit Yate min Yadoi the Esav Achi, and I took it from the hands of my brother. Esav, lo becharbi velo bekashti, not with my sword and not with my bow, elahein bezchute uvaudei tavia, but rather becharav bekeshet are my zchusim, my merits and my good deeds. Interesting that cherev seems to be the zchus, the merit. Those are things, I guess, that are close. Uvaudei tavia, My good deeds are things that are like the keshet, like the bow, right? Maybe you could say that what's the difference? My good deeds are things that travel much, much, much further. All right, do we all agree that this is a lot further from pshat?
Yeah.
yeah, it doesn't seem to be pshat, but there's nothing that has to be wrong with it, meaning like this is a nice medrash that you could take it or leave it. So Rabbi Lam... Say that again?
Unless he's actually giving over those clothing to Ephraim or Menashe, how does that work into the context here?
So he's done with Ephraim. The whole speech is all over the place, right? First he talks about the Ephraim and Menashe. Then he talks about how he buried Rachel in the wrong place. Then he circles back to Ephraim and Menashe. Then so his like train of thought seems to be all over the place. Rav Shalom Shwadron asked the question, and like, you know, implicit in his question is the you know, where you sit there and wonder, like, was it that Yaakov was like no longer fully lucid, and that's why his thoughts are all over the place? He, which is not for now, not enough time, but he develops a whole idea of why this is, to say that this is actually every single piece is in its proper place. So I guess this is his closing message to Yosef, where he says, I'm going to die, and I want you to know that I'm grateful for the fact that you're going to take care of me and bury me in the proper place, and I'm giving you your payment of it, which according to the Targum Yerushalmi, is this coat. So what would you rather have? Would you rather have a double portion in the land of Israel, the city of Shechem, right, where it all started for you, or Adam HaRishon's coat? So Rabbi Lam, he asks... Meaning you would want all. You would want all three.
Got all three. He got
I
all want three.
To know what's behind curtain number two, because I don't know about any of this.
But he got all three. He got Shechem in the portion of Yosef, which is double portion because it was Menashe and Ephraim are equal to the other 10 Shvatim. And maybe he got the coat too.
Right. So the thing, I guess the thing about the second one is he doesn't really, like if you think about it, he does not get a double portion. Right, because the way Nachlo worked was it was per
head count.
Yeah. Right. So if Yosef would have been the biggest tribe.
You got two flags.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So it's more
two flags.
Yeah. It's
representation.
It's status. Right. He gets status of the double shevet, but he doesn't get more land in Israel. So the question, I mean, I guess whatever, you know. The other two are obviously very clear. The fact that he gets this coat is a little bit trickier. Now, there is another medrash. What it took me to find the one or two medrashim I'm going to quote below definitely did not make it worth trying to find this other one. But there is another medrash that says that Esav's coat was actually the one that Yaakov took was the ketonet pasim. Now, They can't both be the same.
Doesn't it say Vayas? Doesn't it say the word Vayas, known as Pasim, with Yosef? That he made it?
I definitely...
And there's no reference to Hashem giving Adam HaRishon a Ketonet Pasim.
Yeah, we're going to get to what that coat was, what that clothing was in a second. V'asalo Ketonet Pasim. Yeah, yes, really, you're right. I just looked it up. Sorry, I have a chumash in the Tanakh like my right next to me. So the one thing I will say is they can't be the same coat, because if it is a ketonet pasim, the brothers rip it up and it's gone, right? It's out of circulation at this point in time. But unless you want to say that Yaakov redid it, which would be a bigger question, why they should say ve'asalo this, not ve'asalo ketonet pasim. But anyway. It's a nice idea. Rabbi Lam says, why does he give the richest man on earth an old coat that's 22 generations old? Now, I actually don't like, I like most of the question, but I actually don't like that part. Meaning, what's the symbolism of giving him a coat is a really good question. Giving the richest man on earth a coat that's 22 generations old, I think is the most beautiful thing, because there's nothing you can give him that has monetary value that will make a difference, right? You get him the latest in technology, he already has it. You get him a beautiful piece of clothing, he already has it. You know, like I remember when my grandmother was Nifteres, the one thing I wanted so badly was she had a necklace that was given to her when she was like 9 years old from her father. It was the necklace that she wore for all her life. In every, like, you know, every memory I have of her, she was wearing it. So it meant a lot to me. So I asked for it. And whatever, you know, to me, that was something that you could write a check, you can give a gift, you can give Yerusha, any of those things. But, like, then the money is spent and it's gone. This was something that was really, really special. So I don't like the way Rabbi Lam asks the question fully, but I do think it's a good question. Why give, at this point in time, on his deathbed, why is he giving him a coat that's 22 generations old? So the question is, what is this coat? So if you take a look at the next source, it says, Vayaseh Hashem Elokim Adam Lishto, Kadnot Or, Vayal Bishem. Adam and his wife get from God, Katnot Or. They get clothing of ore, and he puts it on them. There's a medrash or a pshat that says the reason why he put it on them was to be completely tsanua, so that they wouldn't have to be naked. God actually does the clothing. They were wearing alei teina. They were wearing the leaves, the fig leaves. By God putting them on, it's so that they don't have to be naked at any point in time. All right, but what are katnot or? So Rav and Shmuel chadamar hadavar abamin or v'chadamar davar she'or nenem. One says that they are actually, it's something that comes from skin, meaning it's like the skin of an animal maybe. And the other one says it's katnot or, it's clothing for their skin, right? So the difference is I'm wearing a, you know, I don't know, a rabbit fur, some piece of clothing. So that's from or, right? It's on the skin of a rabbit. Or I'm wearing something, you know, a really nice, comfortable, warm, snug cotton sweatshirt. So that's, you know, sha'or nenami menu. Okay. The Chizkuni, it's just nice what he does create a connection. They're naked, and how does the story, and they get clothing, how does the story begin? Right? V'nachash haya arum. The snake was naked. Now, we usually base it on Rashi's explanation that arum is what? It's he was cunning, but which also is a translation of Arum. But the Chizkuni says no. It all started because he was naked, and in the end, what happens? They become naked. Now take a look at the Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, the first medrash. What was special about this coat? What was it made of? So he says, Rabbi Eliezer, Omer mina or shit hanachash. It was from the skin that the nachash let off, right? Snakes, what do?
Shed.
They shed. So the skin that the snake shed was the clothing that Adam HaRishon and Chava wore. I don't know. I mean, I've seen snake skins before. It's hard to imagine that you could really make a coat out of it, but if God is the tailor, you could do anything. So why? Why, according to the first pshat, was it the coat? Was the clothing made of the skins of the nachash? So this is what Rabbi Lam says: Adam was on top of the world. He was living in Gan Eden. He had everything, and he was going to be the leader of civilization. And what happens? Just like that, it's all left. He's left without even the shirt on his back. Usually when someone goes from like the top to the bottom, we say that they were left with the shirt, with only the shirt on their back. Adam had not even the shirt on his back. And only by Hashem's goodness did he get clothes. So what's the matter trying to teach us? Rabbi Lam says, remember that we're all God-made, not self-made. Yosef, You can live with the illusion that everything was you. You can live with the illusion that you made all of this. But remember, God is the one that made it. And so I'm giving you this piece of clothing as a reminder that Adam HaRishon was in the same spot. He was ruler of the universe. And what happened? He lost it all. Yosef, remain humble. That's his first message. There's another message. There's another medrash. This one, I cannot even tell you. If anybody finds this for me, I'll be so happy. I checked everything in Sepharia. I Googled Adam HaRishon's coat with this, you know, thing on it. I tried everything. Nothing. If you do Google it, chances are you're going to get an article by Dr. Rachel Edelman called Coat of Arms. It's an interesting article. I don't know. There's some cool stuff in there, but it does not have this pshat. The second pshat is that it was a coat that had pictures of birds on it. He gives that to Yosef. Why does he give that to Yosef? So this is what Rabbi Lam says. And this, if anything, ever speaks to our generation, it's this. In 1955, Rabbi Lam gave this drasha in Springfield, Massachusetts. And this is what he said. He quoted someone at the time who said that when they describe the age that we live in his time in the 50s, it will be called the age of the ulcer. Not the age of technology, not the age of the atom bomb, nothing. It's going to be the age of the ulcer. Why? Because we have so much, and yet we just want more. And what it does is it creates such anxiety. It creates such frustration that it's going to be, that's how we're going to be known. So he says to Yosef, listen, Yosef, I want you to recognize that in your position that you're in, there's so much frustration, there's so much anxiety. You're going to find yourself feeling trapped by it. My bracha to you is take this coat, be free like a bird. Adam had lost everything, and yet it's he who on this coat he gets from God, he draws pictures of birds to show that he is free without a worry in the world. That's what he says to Yosef. Yosef, that's my bracha and my message to you. And now let's take a look at the Medrash Tanchuma in Toldot Yud Bet. It's from Toldot Yud Bet because it's talking about the coat of Esav, right? At the moment of the bracha, Mao Kutnot Or, Big Day Kahuna Gedola. He gives him the clothing of the Kohen Gadol. Why would he give him the clothing of the Kohen Gadol? So this is what he says. Yosef gets the clothing of the Kohen Gadol because that clothing is as Jewish as it gets. He says to Yosef, I want you to remember and take pride in your Judaism. That's the most important thing to me. I want you to recognize that even though you're the leader of the Jewish people, leader of the civilized world, that the most precious clothing should be the clothing of the Jewish people. You should not be uncomfortable seeing things that are very, very, very Jewish. I'll end with a story. There is a guy, I think his name is Beryl Solomon. He comes up in my LinkedIn feed a lot. So if you didn't see this, he came up with he put out a movie called Orthodoxed. It's excellent. It's like a 50-minute YouTube video. You could watch it in 1.5 speed. It won't take you all that long, but it's really excellent. It's his life story. So I won't spoil it in case you do want to watch it. But he becomes frum, and when he becomes like Lubavitch frum. So he's got like a long beard and the whole everything, and he decides that he's going to work for his dad. And his dad, they have a business, like opportunity, and they're debating who to send. And he's supposed to go. He's like his dad's right-hand man. And they look at him. He's just flipped out. And they're like, we're not sending you. Like, you look so, so Jewish. And he said that he actually insisted that he was going to go. And he does. In the end, of course, he brings his tefillin, and the CEO of the company he's dealing with has never worn tefillin in his life and puts on tefillin for the first time. But his response to his company is, I'm going to show them what Jewish people are, and we're going to be proud. But a lot of people don't feel that way. So Yosef's message from his dad is, wear this clothing proudly, be proud of where you came from, and remember that's your source. Rabbi Lam says all three of these are things that really are so critical for Yosef to hear. It's a message of, remember where you came from, remember the lowly beginning of the snake, and even if you're on top of the world, you don't know where you're headed. Of course, be happy with what you have. Everything comes from God. And the third one is, remember who your people are and be proud of them. That Rabbi Lam says is not only the message of Shechem Echad al Achecha that Yosef gets, but it is a message that is most, most, most valuable. certainly in 1955, but I believe that it is still just as timely today. Have a great Shabbos, everyone.